My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
Live on Aero. Presented by Ger Sweeney.
Good evening and welcome. Nice to have your company for another edition of Live on Aero, the Irish programme, and I'll be with you right through until 7. Stay with me, please, if you can. As always, can I remind you that if you would like to get in contact with the programme, I would love to hear from you if you think there's something happening that we should be letting you know about, particularly in the Irish community here in Spain, but anything that might be relevant to an Irish audience, or indeed anybody that is listening that has an interest in Ireland, do let me know. The email address is GEOR@TRE.radio. All right, GEOR@TRE.radio. Coming up this evening on the programme, I'm glad to say that our good old pal George Lee is back with us. Myself and George will have an old chat about some of the stories that are making headlines back in Ireland, and some of them will be relevant, of course, to life in Spain and indeed other parts of the world as well, because obviously COVID is going to be mentioned. So we'll talk to George about what's happening in Ireland. I'll be looking at some of the famous Irish birthdays that we will be celebrating and marking in this coming week. Great Irish music throughout the programme, including the number one song in Ireland on this very day, back in 1978. And I will be letting you know what might be coming up on the programme next week as well. So plenty in there. Before I go any farther, can I say a big thank you to Dave Hodgson, for looking after you with the Daily for the last 2 hours. Thanks, Dave. He's on his way home. So safe journey and enjoy Live on Aero as you travel along the A7, or do battle on the A7, as I generally tend to say. Will we start with the famous Irish birthdays, as we always do? These are people that would be well known in Ireland or around Ireland, or they're Irish people that would be known across the world. And some still with us, some unfortunately gone to better places, hopefully, but we'd like to mark their birthdays anyway. Today is the 28th, a man that is thankfully very much still with us and still turning out the hits, and a man that we see regularly in Spain as well. Finbar Fury has been a guest on the programme. He celebrates his birthday today. Singer, songwriter, musician, born in Dublin in 1946. Jasmine Guinness, model, was born in 1976 on this day. Patrick Cosgrove, the writer, was born in 1941. And a Limerick man, his art is known the world over. Sean Keating was born on this day back in 1889. Tomorrow is the 29th of September. Hard to believe that September is almost gone. Catherine McCauley, the founder of the Sisters of Mercy Order. She was born in Dublin on the 29th of September back in 1778. Wednesday is the last day of the month. Cecilia Ahern, the writer, was born on that day. Oh, I can't even tell you what year because I didn't put it down for some strange reason. Anyway, we wish her a happy birthday on Wednesday. David Geraghty, the singer and musician, particularly known for his work with Bell X1, born in Leixlip in County Kildare in 1975. Happy birthday to David. Right, into October we go. Wow, the nights will be falling in and the weather will be getting a bit chillier. And also, I know it's chilly in Ireland at the moment, but thankfully we still have the heat here in Spain. Thursday, the 1st of October, Richard Harris, wonderful actor and singer sometimes, born in Limerick in 1930 on that day. Keith Duffy, actor and singer. You'll remember Keith Duffy acting in various things, particularly Coronation Street. He was a member of Boyzone. He was born in Dublin in 1974. Brendan O'Dowda, wonderful singer. Ah, yes, indeed. Gorgeous tenor voice, born in 1925. Joe Rooney, the actor, writer and comedian, born in Tuam in County Galway back in 1963. If you are a fan of Pat Short's Kilnascully, you will remember him from that. He was one of the two Gombeen lads that used to sit either side of Pat in the pub. That'd be Joe Rooney. But you also might remember him from the famous Guinness ad a number of years ago. Do you remember the one where he danced around the pint? That was Joe Rooney. Anyway, Paddy Crosby, the broadcaster, born in Dublin, 1913, on that day. Next Friday is the 2nd of October, and Keith Barry, magician and hypnotist, born in Waterford in 1976. Brian James Roach, dancer and actor, born in Ardnacrusha in County Clare in 1987. And Rachel Rath, the actor, was born in Gorey in County Wexford in 1976 on that day. Into the weekend we go. Next Saturday is the 3rd, and Danny O'Donoghue, the singer-songwriter who heads the script, well, he was born in Dublin in 1980. Niall Buggy, the actor, was born on that day in 1948 in Dublin. And finally, next Sunday is the 4th. Katrina Balfe, model and actor, was born in Dublin in 1979. Mary Kennedy, the RTE broadcaster, was born in Dublin on that day in 1956. Charlie McConnellogue, recently appointed Minister for Agriculture, the third Minister for Agriculture in the space of about 2 months, was born in County Donegal in 1967. And finally, Fiona Doyle, the swimmer, was born in Limerick on the 4th of October back in 1991. There we go. That's a very quick look at some of the famous Irish birthdays happening this coming week. And there are a number of musical ones in there. I like the band Bell X1. And David Geraghty, the singer with Bell X1, is celebrating his birthday next Thursday. So we wish him a very happy birthday. No, he's not. It's on Wednesday. We wish him a very happy birthday. And here is his band, Bell X1, and a song called Careful What You Wish For.
It's coming faster now. And I never thought I'd be here. Running past you now. But you're holding out on me. A strip of lace in your collarbone. Think I caught you catching me. Space off.
Thank you.
One, that's a song that's called Careful What You Wish For, and we play that because David Geraghty from Bellex One celebrates his birthday on Wednesday. We wish him a very happy birthday on that day. Now, usually I say to you at the top of the programme, I can't remember, I hope I did say, I hope you had a good week. A man that certainly had a good week, and I thought it would be appropriate to give him a mention. He's only a young man, and his name is Aaron Hill. He had a memorable week, as I said. He's from Cork, only a teenager, and he's a snooker player. And he had a great time at the European Masters over the last week or so. Unfortunately, it all came to an end on Friday for him. But having stunned six-time world champion Ronnie O'Sullivan on Thursday night, the 18-year-old overcame world number three Matthew Stevens on Friday. The youngster, who is ranked 115th in the world, trailed Stevens 2-1 at the mid-session interval. However, an impressive fight back saw the Irish star win the famous two frames to earn a 5-3 victory and set up a last 16 encounter with world number 15 Yan Bingtao. The Chinese star ultimately proved too good for the youngster, winning 5-1 to reach the quarterfinals. So congratulations to him, but well done to 18-year-old Aaron Hill from Cork. What a fabulous week he had, and I'm sure a man that we're going to hear an awful lot more from. Yeah. And of course, last week, last Sunday in Paris, we saw Sam Bennett take the green jersey at the Tour de France. So it's been a good week for Irish young stars in the world of sport. Let's do a quick break, shall we? Come back to me just after that, and I'll be talking to our good old pal, George Lee. He's on Skype.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. I did say I was going to be talking to some interesting people. They're not available, so George Lee is joining me today instead. George, it's good to have you back. How are you?
After that insult, Ger, I'm absolutely superb.
Well, I thought I'd get the revenge in first, you know, because usually there's something waiting. Anyway, we're going to try and catch up with things that are happening. But we were talking off air and I was saying to you that it's a difficult time because there's not a whole lot happening. The news is full of COVID. And if it's not COVID, it's Trump. And I don't know which is worse, and how governments are dealing with COVID and stuff. So it's difficult to find good news and to find happy news. But I suppose we'll start with the COVID, if that's all right with you today.
Absolutely, Ger. Yeah, let's rock on with that.
Okay, and
it's actually strange, Ger, because you know we were doing a lot of this around this time last year as well.
Yeah.
Every single week we commented on the fact that we were going to talk about Brexit, and nothing else in the news, only Brexit.
Yeah.
I'm just dreading to see what the D's bring us in 2021.
Yeah. The C word. We'll talk about the C word now in a minute, but let's start with the other C word. And I suppose the big news is that Donegal is the latest county to join Dublin at level 3, and that was announced late last week. News that wasn't taken with a spoon of sugar. They're upset in Donegal about it.
They are, but I think it's very, very serious. I heard over the weekend a doctor from Donegal saying that whatever about contact tracing, he had managed to contact trace himself, in that he could name the events that led to this in Donegal.
Yeah.
That he said there was there was a christening, then there was a wake, and then there was a party.
Wow.
He said 54 of his patients within a 10-day period had come into him, all diagnosed positively with COVID. And he said he could name and shame almost, if that's the right term.
Right.
But that the point he was making was not to name and shame these people, but how quickly this can take off. And I think this is something, and I know I've been rabbiting on about this on my own personal social media during the week as well. People are beginning to get tired of it, and I suppose that's absolutely understandable. But we need to redouble our efforts. I was in three shops on Thursday in Limerick. There was a very blasé approach to masks.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a major hardware chain on Friday. I went in there. They have wonderful signage in there. They have floor decals coming out the door on one-way systems. This is a place where a lot of builders go and all of that. I was shocked. Masks, as I call it, at half-mast, which means that they're down over the
covering
top lip
the chin
almost.
All right, yeah.
And a general blasé, that's the word, I think, attitude towards the way in which things are approached. So much so that I ruminated on it, and I actually sent an email to the store afterwards just to pointed out to them, because I really felt that these are the things, you know. And a lady arriving into another shop that I was in the other day, and she didn't have her mask on, and she turned to the girl behind the desk and, you know, said, I don't have it with me, love, is that okay?
Right.
And you kind of said, well, yeah, you know, the virus doesn't give you permission not to wear the mask, you know, like, get a mask. Get a life, you know.
A lot of people here actually wear them on their wrist, and I've got into the habit of doing the very same, so that, you know, when you're getting into the car and you take the mask off, put it on the wrist, because when you get out of the car at the shop, you think, oh, where's my mask? It's on the wrist, and it's very handy.
Bit like the scrunchie for your hair, Ger.
Yeah. Bit like the scrunchie for my hair. I noted as well on Friday that the chief medical officers in both the Republic of Ireland, that'd be Ronan Glynn, and Northern Ireland, Michael McBride, issued a joint appeal to people not to cross the border unless it's absolutely necessary. So there was some indication that maybe the amount of COVID cases in the north might be impacting on Donegal, being a border county as well. So things like that. The Taoiseach has warned that Limerick, Waterford, Cork and Galway are on the watch list. The green list for travel has been updated. Only four countries on it now. Cyprus, Finland, Latvia and Liechtenstein is there as well. So there's been a lot of movement this week, hasn't there, in it?
There has. And I suppose, look, going back to the time of the Troubles, you know, that border was always very porous between Donegal and the north, north of Ireland. I think it borders three counties. And again, I think maybe for people that aren't familiar with that part of the world, the areas we're talking about are Lifford and Stranorlar, and they're right on the border. Yeah. I mean, they literally have Strabane, literally cross a bridge on a river, and you're into the north, as you are in parts of Cavan, into Belcove. From Black Lion. But I suppose, look, the bottom line here, Ger, is again, the virus doesn't respect borders. People in those areas, by nature of their work, by nature of their shopping, by nature of their lives, move between the north and the south maybe 15 times a day. If you're going to collect kids, or you're shopping, or your workplace is in it, there's going to be cross-fertilization in these places. And just, it's down to care again. We just need, you know, the messaging has got very complicated, but it's very, very simple. Wash your hands, socially distance, and wear a mask. It's very easy. Just do those things and you'll be fine.
Yeah, it appears to be as simple as that. In the sporting world, George, we know that the big events are taking place behind closed doors. I know that earlier in the summer, you would normally have like the county championships. So the local clubs in each county would play. Those county championships are coming to an end. And we were hoping for an All-Ireland series, as we'll call it, the inter-county hurling to start. Do you think it will, with the amount of lockdowns that are going on?
Well, the government are after pumping 15 million into getting it up and running. Only yesterday that was announced across the ladies' Gaelic football, the camogie, and the obviously the hurling. And that's pro rata on what their attendances were last year, I think, is the way in which it's going to be divvied up.
Okay.
So I think there will be a major push, in the same way that there was a major push to getting the kids back to school. I think the government have identified that getting the championships play people's mental health, I think, as much as everything else, there will be a major push for it. How successful? They have also introduced a fast testing system, a rapid testing system for use in the 3 or 4 days in the run-up to a match, that if one player is diagnosed with COVID, that they can rapidly test the other players on the team. And I think that is aimed at that as well. The other organisation that I'm very involved with, as you know, is Sporting Limerick. Mm-hmm. Sporting Limerick has had a bumper summer because we have been in the sports live streaming business. And we've done the live streaming for Limerick and Tipperary and for Cork with the Irish Examiner. And that has, I suppose, brought the matches to people in a way that they would never have expected. But it's also brought a revenue stream for the county boards, which has been excellent. Will the championship get played? 2 months ago, I would have said absolutely not. I think it is a priority for the government to get them played. Will they be any good? Will they be regarded? I don't know. But as part of another project I'm involved in at the moment, I've been doing a lot of research on the championship, and in going through that, you know, many, many times going back to the late 1800s and into the early 1900s, the GA championship was often 2 years behind in terms of it being played. I think there's great credit due to the GA for wanting to get it played in this year. Mm-hmm. The other part of things that I suppose that's a little less clear, and this probably impacts on people an awful lot more, is, you know, the standard five-a-side lads going into play soccer on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night. And guys need that, particularly during the winter. And it's a bit of banter and it's a bit of crack. And, you know, lads might go to the pub afterwards for a pint or whatever it is. And you know, all of that has been disrupted as well, Ger. And I really think it's getting to the stage where COVID is more of a mental health bug than it is a physical virus.
And just on that, and we'll finish with COVID then, if that's all right, unless you have anything else you want to add to it. But something that will impact you and your life, because you have a daughter in college. Colleges last Friday were asked to go online for the next 2 weeks or thereabouts to stop students travelling across the country to college and coming home again. How are students handling that?
I know it's very difficult, Gerard. I know, speaking to my own daughter even, I mean, my own daughter is in college in a different part of Ireland, as you know. She says herself, Dad, I went to college to kind of get away from me, you know. I go to college every morning now by getting up out of bed, taking two steps over to the computer, just remembering to have to put on a sweatshirt and go on Zoom, you know. But I suppose the impact, again, you know, these are the unseen impacts. One of the other impacts is that, you know, my daughter would have been in student accommodation last year within the college. And we made a decision this year that she wouldn't go into the student accommodation, but that she's just going to take a hotel room for the period of time that she's there. So there's a knock on then for the accommodation people. Mm-hmm. There's a knock on for the economies of the various cities in which these colleges exist. But I think far more importantly, Gerard, there will be a realization that maybe we don't need to do this thing all of the time in colleges. Mm-hmm. Maybe this will be a complete change. You know, it's a very expensive thing for a parent to send a child, for instance, to Dublin, where accommodation can be 10,000 euros a year for accommodation in some respects. And you kind of say, well, look, if they can do it for their living room for half the year, you know, that's only 5,000, you know? So maybe this will be an eye-opener, because I have no doubt that there will be COVID benefits seen as well at the end of all of this.
Okay, let's leave COVID there unless anything happens in the next couple of minutes and we'll come back to it. The environment, and you mentioned earlier on that one of the big things we were talking about last year was Brexit. We were also talking about the environment and, you know, Greta and her band of warriors and students were getting very much involved in the whole thing and we were becoming a lot more environmentally conscious. An estimated 1,300 people are prematurely dying each year in Ireland due to poor air quality. That's according to a new report. What's all that about?
Well, the first thing that I did is that after you sent me the notes on this yesterday, Ger, and I was reading them over last night, as I leaned down to light my first fire of the winter.
With one of the sheets of notes.
I got an incredible pang of conscience of the particular matter that I was putting out into the environment. Yeah, look, I think it's no coincidence that we have a Green Party in government. There's a lot of green agenda items suddenly beginning to rise, I suppose. But look, this is a big, big, big story. Look, we all remember the good old bad days when you could cut the smog in Dublin and in Limerick. I mean, I can remember, and as somebody like yourself, I suppose, that suffers a little from asthma, and particularly when it gets very cold and the weather is very cold, it affects me. I do know that you do notice it in the middle of winter an awful lot more. Mm-hmm. So look, it is a difficulty. I think we've been very, very slow in dealing with it. And maybe all of this thing could be sorted out. In fairness to Mary Harney, when she was minister, you know, she was the one that sorted out the smog in Dublin.
She did, with the smoking coal or the non-smoking coal.
Why has it taken so long just to ban smoky coal right across the whole country? I mean, just ban it, you know, take it out of the equation. There's a crazy situation that exists now that in one part of Limerick, for instance, you can buy a bag of coal and they're not allowed to sell you a bag of coal that's smoky coal.
Yeah.
But if you go half a mile down the road, you can buy a bag of smoky coal because it's in a different zone.
Brought it into Ennis, firstly, Ennis is not allowed smoky coal. But if you live outside Ennis, you could have, right? And I went to the man that sells me my coal, and he's a great character. I've been buying coal off him for years. And he said to me, as he was loading the coal in the car, "When did you move to Lisa Casey?" I said, "What?" He said, when did you move to Lizzie Casey? I said, I didn't move to Lizzie Casey. You did, he said, you moved to Lizzie Casey. And he pointed at the back. Oh, I said last week. So, there was a lot. And I actually, would you believe it, that was the last time I used it because I kind of felt bad. You know, thought he was doing me a favour. And I thought, well, I'm living in Ennis. There's no smoky coal allowed. I shouldn't be using it. So I didn't after that, just in case anybody thinks that I did.
All right.
Yeah. And this all comes back, linking that to the story, a thing called particulate matter, or PM. Yes. That's the small little fragments in the air that's released from all this kind of stuff that we're burning. Yeah. That's what's called.
You and I would have heard of the stuff. The stuff that's in the smoke, essentially. And it's so small that it gets into your alveoli and into your lungs and all of that, and creates a difficulty.
The particular report we're talking about found that 33 monitoring stations across Ireland recorded air pollutants at levels above the WHO guidelines. That's kind of like, wow, we need to do something about that.
Yeah, it's absolutely dreadful, Jerry. As somebody that kind of goes back west an awful lot, and inhales the great sea air, off the Atlantic, you really do begin to appreciate.
You too. Yeah. Come here, when we were going to school, I saw you bringing apples to the teachers regularly, but this is a different apple story. The European Commission will appeal the 14.3 billion apple tax judgment to the highest court in the European Union. EU Competition Commissioner Marguerite Vestager, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, confirmed the decision in a statement on Friday. This is big news for Ireland.
It is, and of course the Irish government had it well written off, Chair, anyway, I suppose, from a perspective that they really felt that they were never going to take it in the first place. This is a much bigger deal than just an apple judgment, by all accounts. This brings the whole Irish tax regime for foreign direct investment companies into view. I listened with a certain amount of interest to Pascal Donoghue, who's our finance minister, as you know, on the radio yesterday, but he also holds now a European brief as the chairman of all of the finance ministers.
Oh, yes.
For the And talk about a man walking on a knife edge. He was on one hand playing the Irish card and on the other hand playing the European card. And I mean, we're at a situation now where the government, just for people that may understand that there was a judgment originally made that Apple owed the Irish government 14.3 million in terms of its... billions, millions, who cares?
Yeah.
Owed them that amount of money in taxes. The Irish government and Apple appealed that, and it was found that they didn't. The European Union have now gone back, and this was through the European courts, and appealed that decision. It has massive implications for Ireland. I mean, if you think about it, Ger, that 14.3 billion will go an awful long way in terms of our COVID payments and all of what has happened in the last while. It's like a little bit like when your least favourite auntie, when you were a kid, you'd go to visit and she'd put a tenner in your hand at the end of it and your mother would have told you not to take it.
Yeah.
And Ireland is kind of saying, I don't want it, honest God, I don't want it. So it's quite an interesting thing. I mean, the legal row on this one stems from a commission probe into Apple's Irish tax structures. And on foot of that investigation, there was two tax rulings delivered by the Revenue in 1991 and 2007 that allowed the company to put its profits through Irish anchored structures without paying tax in any jurisdiction. Mm. So the bottom line then was that the Commission argued that the rulings had been breached EU state aid rules and that they were designed to prevent individual companies from getting favourable treatment by member state governments. So that's the basis of it.
I can see why the government is doing what they're doing, because Apple is such a big employer and brings so much money into the economy. However, as a small to medium sized enterprise or a sole trader myself, every cent that I earn has got to be taxed. And you look at Apple, that have got gazillions, and they're getting away with it. So there's a lot of people on the ground would think, well, you know what, let them pay their fair share. But I understand the way it works.
Well, it was interesting that I was watching the news the other day when it was reported, and that was one news story. And the absolute next news story was that the government were going to claw back the money that people had overpaid or underpaid in terms of their COVID payments, and that they were going to give people, and it could be anything up to about 1,100 or 1,200 quid, but that, you know, that they were going to claw that back over 4 years.
That's
and
right.
Hold on a second here. You have 14.3 billion sitting in an escrow account from Apple. Could you not just write it off and take the money from Apple?
All right. Look, a story that affects some people, but not everybody on the face of it. But here's something that just might. Green Party leader Eamon Ryan has suggested that a conscience vote within his party, the Green Party, obviously, on next week's bill on assisted dying is a real possibility. Now, the Dying with Dignity Bill 2020 seeks to legislate for allowing medical professionals assist terminally ill people end their own life, should that be their stated intention. It's actually this week that that bill is before the Dáil. Yeah, conscience vote. You don't hear parties too often allowing their members and their TDs to have a conscience vote. But this is a bill that there's a lot of attention on.
It is. And I suppose, look, Jerry, this is an area that I would have worked in, as you know, for a long period of time in a previous life through in palliative care. It's very, very difficult. And look, people will line up vociferously on both sides of this argument. And it's very difficult to make a judgment on this when you're sitting at home with a clean bill of health and you're not being subject to a carer coming in to get you up in the morning or that you're not the carer of somebody who's in extreme pain and you're looking at them every day. So it's not for me to make a judgment on whether this is right or wrong. And maybe that's where the whole thing of a conscience vote comes in. However, on the other side of that, I suppose I would have been very close to many, many people in their last few weeks of life over the period of life, far more than most. And one thing that I think predominantly came across to me in those days was that people wanted to hang on to every last minute of life that they could possibly get. Now, that was my perception of it. If I were in the situation where I was looking at something, what way would my mind work? I can't tell, Ger, in the same way that you can't predict how you're going to feel after grief yourself.
Correct.
Or you give somebody a scenario and you say, how are you going to feel as a result of that? Unless you're in the situation and you see everything else that's impacting on it, I think you can't make a correct judgment. The old adage that goes that, you know, hard cases make bad law, I think is very true to form here. We did it with divorce in this country. We did it with abortion. We did it with gay rights. We did it with all of those things. And ultimately, we came there, we circled the wagons, we had the arguments, and we found a way through them. And you know what? The world didn't end. So I think this has to be approached in a similar type way. I think Enda Kenny did a superb job around the 8th and repealing the 8th and all of that at the time. And I think ultimately it probably was the first time in this country that I saw a separation of church and state. Do I agree with everything that is in legislation? No, I don't. But you know what? There's parts of the Road Traffic Act that I don't agree with either.
Yeah, of course.
So that's why it's called a conscience vote.
It's interesting that you mentioned Enda Kenny there and how he handled the 8th, because his successor is Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, and at a Fine Gael parliamentary party on Thursday, party TDs and senators spoke in favour of a free vote on the legislation, but others raised concerns. Obviously, there was divergence of opinion. But Leo Varadkar said to the meeting that he would be in favour of establishing a special Oireachtas committee to look at the issue of assisted dying, similar to what was done on the 8th Amendment. So it could be a journey like that that they're going to take on it.
To be fair to Enda Kenny, he found a way of doing this. At the time, I actually said, or I think I may have said it to you on air, that I felt that this was a kick to Dutch by Enda Kenny.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the end, it actually worked out very well. In the same way that I think, that the meetings on the Constitution that are ongoing as well at the moment were up to the time of COVID, I think are a very good thing, because look, law, legislation, constitutions, all of those things are living documents and they need to reflect the times in which they exist.
All right. Look, George, finally, let's do something a little more lighthearted. A rare bottle of 1880s Irish whiskey is expected to fetch...
What? You mentioned whiskey.
Whiskey, yeah. Yeah, before the watershed or the ice shed. It's expected to fetch more than €12,000 when it goes under the hammer. Rather strange way of phrasing it, with a bottle and hammer and all that kind of stuff. Anyway, the auction is happening next month. The Cassidy and Co. Monastery Riven Whiskey is the star lot of a pub collection auction of more than 10,000 advertising and memorabilia items. The whiskey was made by the Cassidy family, who made whiskey at their Kildare Mill from 1784, I think it was, until 1921. €12,000 for a bottle of whiskey. Sure, you'd have no peace drinking that.
Well, that's what I was just thinking, Ger. Can you imagine putting it up to your lips and say, well, I drink this now, it is gone.
Yeah, 12 grand. I mean, I know that
people... You'd be kind of inclined to bottle what comes out the other end to you.
typical you, bringing it into the gutter. but it's the same with people that collect wine. They don't collect it to drink it, they collect it to have it and look at it. I suppose maybe art might be the same, I don't know.
Yeah, but is it a bit different? I don't know. Look, I mean, we've all been on holidays. I suppose we've all gone to the vineyards and we've gone to the breweries and we've seen all of this stuff in reality and how it works. Look, it's a collector's item like anything else. I do remember being in Adare Manor a number of years ago and going into what they call their tack room, which is a beautiful room that's set up, but it's kind of a whiskey tasting room.
Oh, yeah.
There was a bottle of Middleton that I was shown at the time, which was up behind the counter, and the barman took it down laughingly and he said, look, would you like a snip of this? I said, I'd love it. He says, that's grand. He says, it'll be €950 a shot.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking to myself, wow. But you see, Ger, the other side of this is that the people that buy these things, the people that drink these things, generally have enough money that they don't notice it.
Oh, no, there's no way. Like, I mean, it hurts me to go and spend €20 on a bottle of Jameson. You know, you think, I must sip this slowly.
We were in the north of the country last week, and I had my daughter in the car, and I have to tell you, of course, she's overage, but the one thing she wanted to do was go to Asda to get the cheap Magnus cider.
the posh side of the family.
It was a euro cheaper a can in Asda than it would have been over the border. So yeah, look, it depends what you want to do with it, Ger, I suppose. And look, there's certain people collect these things. There's certain people for whom these things matter. But I suppose if you're trying to put the meat on the table every night, the last thing in the world you want to do is spend 12 grand on a bottle of whiskey.
It could actually go to 23 because the auctioneer is a fellow by the name of Victor Mee, and Victor Mee auctions are online for anybody that wants that might have 23 grand or 12 grand. To spend on a bottle of whiskey. They've moved online actually, incidentally, from as a result of COVID. But anyway, he's basically said that, you know, the whiskey like this can go for 23,000 or 25,000 a bottle. So interesting.
And it's quite interesting that there are other things, of course, going under the hammer in that auction as well, you know, and things like civic pipes, advertising cabinets. Yeah. This one I love, which is a rare 1950s Guinness perpetual calendar.
Yes.
I wonder, has it run out yet, you know? Smithwick's, the Great Draft beer light-up box, McConnell's Old Irish Whiskey, Cromack Distillery, Belfast Pot Stills, only framed advertising mirror, and the 1950s Guinness is welcome in the home celluloid advertising sign. Just on that, Ger, I've got to tell you a little anecdote. Many, many years ago, as you know, I did some merchandising when I left college. One of the products that I was merchandising at the time was Irish Mist.
Right.
Which, as you know, is a liqueur. And they had a promotion, which was that you literally went around to every pub and, you know, whether they had Irish Mist or not, you were entitled to offer them 6 glasses and a little light-up thing that you put. The bottle is a beautifully decorated bottle, glass bottle, of course, that it comes in. But that this was a little light that you'd sit the bottle on top and that it threw the light up through it. And you were giving these out essentially. So you go into a pub, you say, lads, would you like 6 glasses and would you like the light? You can take the plug off it and put it on the telly if you want afterwards, yeah, but yeah. I just need to get the plug. And I remember going into pubs, and you know, I was absolutely amazed at the number of pubs that said to me, no, we don't want them, take them away. Because they couldn't get their heads around the fact that you were giving them to them for nothing. You know?
Right. Really?
There had to be a catch. There had to be a catch here. And it was about a one in three hit that you wouldn't actually, they'd say, no, look, I don't want the glasses. I don't want, I'm not taking them.
Lads, when they go out for a pint or go to the pub, they know exactly what they want. They have the same thing every time. And, you know, the barman is probably not in the business of pushing Irish Mist or pushing anything in particular any one week. So maybe that was part of the logic behind it as well. And little Feldels up on the counter wouldn't matter. You know, the lads would be looking at the racing page anyway, or they'd be doing crosswords or whatever. So, you know, maybe that was it.
And tell me, have you managed to get back to the pub yet, Ger?
No, because I'm still in Spain. So at once I go home and I do my isolation, my quarantining, I'll be there then. I have the reservation made.
We will look forward to that, and we might even join you for the Chinese in the car afterwards.
Lovely, look forward to that. But someone else will have to drive the car, obviously. Be sensible about this. Right, George Lee, thanks very much for talking to us about a couple of the bits and pieces that's happening in Ireland at the minute. Good to catch up with you, as always. Stay well, and look forward to maybe touching base again very shortly.
Look after yourself and stay safe, Ger.
It's here I am today, God gave and took away, and left without a home, poor Dan O'Hara, with these matches in me hand, in the frost and snow I stand, and here I am today, now broken hearted. In the year of 64, we had acres by the score, the grandest land a man could pull a plough through, but the landlords came in on and they laid their houses low, and here I am today now broken hearted. Cush McGamachree, won't you buy a box from me, you'll have the prayers from Dan from Connemara, sure I says them cheap and low, buy a box before you go, from the broken-hearted farmer Dan O'Hara. And for 20 years or more did misfortune cross me door, me poor old wife and they were sadly parted, we were scattered far and wide, then our children starved and died, and here I am today now broken-hearted. Cush McGamachree, won't you buy a box from me, you'll have the prayers from Dan from Connemara, sure I says them cheap and low, buy a box before you go, from the broken-hearted farmer Dan O'Hara. Though in frost and snow I stand beneath the shadow of God's hand, it lies warm upon the brow of Dan O'Hara, and sure soon with him above I will meet the ones I loved, and find where I have lost in Connemara. Cush McGamachree, won't you buy a box from me, you'll have the prayers from Dan from Connemara, sure I says them cheap and low, buy a box before you go, from the broken-hearted farmer Dan O'Hara. Cush McGamachree, won't you buy a box from me, you'll have the prayers from Dan from Connemara, sure I says them cheap and low, buy a box before you go, from the broken-hearted farmer Dan O'Hara. Cush McGamachree, won't you buy a box from me, you'll have the prayers from Dan from Connemara, sure I sells them cheap and low, buy a box before you go, from the broken-hearted farmer Dan O'Hara.
Wonderful music, and I think it's the second week in a row that we've had the music from Finbar Fury, because wasn't it last week Davy Arthur celebrated his birthday and we took a track from himself and the Fury brothers. But anyway, that's a track called Dan O'Hara, and that's to celebrate Finbar Fury's birthday, which is happening today. So happy birthday to him. Let's do a very quick break, shall we, and come back to me just after that. It was a good old long chat as well with George, wasn't it? It was, yeah, most enjoyable. Hope you enjoyed it as well. Anyway, after the break, we'll take a listen to the number one song in Ireland on this very day back in 1978.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. On a weekly basis, I like to pick a number one from a particular day, well, the day of the programme, in some time in history. And today, I've chosen the number one song in Ireland on the 28th of September, back in 1978. Now, this particular song hung around the charts for, I think, over 100 weeks, so that'd be over 2 years. I'm almost certain. I must check it out and see just how long it was. But here she is, the number one song in Ireland on this day in 1978. Gloria, a song called One Day at a Time.
I I'm only human, I'm just a woman. Help me believe in what I could be and all that I am. Show me the stairway I have to climb. Lord, for my sake, teach me to take one day at a time. One day at a time. Sweet Jesus, that's all I'm asking from you. Just give me the strength to do every day what I have to do. Yesterday's gone, sweet Jesus, and tomorrow may never be mine. Lord, help me today, show me the way, one day at a time. Remember when you walked among men? Well, Jesus, you know, if you're looking below, it's worse now than then. Pushing and shoving and crowding my mind. So for my sake, Lord, teach me to take one day at a time. One day at a time. Sweet Jesus, that's all I'm asking from you. Just give me the strength to do every day what I have to do. Yesterday's gone, sweet Jesus, and tomorrow may never be mine. Lord, help me today, show me the way, one day at a time. Lord, help me today, show me the way, one day at a time.
Gloria and a song called One Day at a Time. It was number one in Ireland on this day back in 1978. Our number one song for today. Now, I was talking to George there a few minutes ago, and we were talking about, you know, the fact that there's not a whole lot of news happening. COVID is very much to the fore. Brexit is kind of to the fore as well. And other than that, you're kind of struggling to see what you can come up with on a weekly basis. But one of the problems that we were talking about in relation to Ireland a lot last year, and indeed up to March, I suppose, of this year, was the issue of homelessness. And I see that charities have urged the government, Irish government, to take action in next month's budget, as the latest figures showed that just over 8,700 people were homeless in Ireland in August of this year. The 8,702 people in emergency accommodation last month was a slight decrease on the numbers in July. The small fall in numbers this month follows a trend which began in March with a drop in the number of homeless people in Ireland. However, charities have warned that these gains will be reversed after the government lifted the moratorium on evictions and rent freezes. Of course, that was put in place because of the COVID story. These organisations operating in the sector are looking to Budget 2021, set to be unveiled in October, to offer greater supports to help address the problem. Peter McVerry Trust CEO Pat Doyle said, as the minister, Dara O'Brien he's referring to, has already pointed out, the big challenge is securing homes for single people, and Budget 2021 needs to ensure that it promotes and enables greater delivery of one-bed homes. This could include incentivizing the delivery of over-the-shop apartment schemes by reducing the rate of VAT on works for refurbishing and reusing vacant town centre premises. Dublin Simon Community, meanwhile, issued a warning that the figures indicate that the number of single people homeless in Dublin could reach 3,000 by Christmas. So there you can see that the problem hasn't gone away. It has been masked ever so slightly, and I suppose the amount of people in. I know we were talking about 10,000 last year. Now we're talking about 8,700. There's a slight reduction, but certainly a lot more work to be done. Let's take some more music, shall we? This song is taken from a band called The Script. And the reason that we're playing music from The Script is because Danny O'Donoghue, singer-songwriter with The Script, was born in Dublin in 1980. Next Saturday will be his birthday, the 3rd of October. So let's take this particular track. It's called Anybody There.
My head is saying no, but my heart keeps giving in. So hard to let it go when it's there under my skin. Well, if this is the face of a sinner, and if heaven's only for winners, well, I don't care, 'cause I won't know anybody there. Thought that I'd let it slide, but it's me that's slipping in. Thought that I'd go for a ride before this crash I'm dying in. Well, if I'm judged on the life I've been living, and if heaven is not so forgiving, well, I don't care, 'cause I won't know anybody there. To let it go when it's there under my skin. Well, if I'm judged on the life I've been living, and if heaven's not so forgiving, well, I don't care, 'cause I won't know anybody there.
Song. It comes from The Script. It's a song that's called Anybody There? I sincerely hope you have been there and been there since 6 o'clock. If you've missed any of the programme, by the way, you can catch up, yes, on the website tre.radio. You'll see the listen back facility that is there, and all you've got to do is put in the date and the time that you want to listen back. Everything is there for a week, so you can listen back over a week period. So if you've missed any of it and you'd like to hear it all, well then that's exactly how you can do it. We played The Script, by the way, because Danny O'Donoghue, the lead singer, celebrates his birthday this coming week, next Saturday the 3rd of October, so we wish him a very happy birthday on that. That's my lot for today. I hope that you have enjoyed the programme. Oh yeah, next week. You may have heard a lot of talk through the years about the Irish colleges in Spain. A lot of young men left Ireland back in the 1600s, 1700s, 1800s and came to Spain to study for the priesthood, because there was no such thing allowed in Ireland at the time, because we were under British rule. And Catholicism was not really allowed at the time. So the Spanish opened their arms and said, yeah, you lads, you can come to Spain. We'll teach you, we'll educate you, and we'll get you through the system. And then you can go back home and you can do what you need to do. Well, a lot of those Irish, in fact, they're all gone now. But As each one closed, the records and the papers and the archives were gathered, and they were all eventually in Salamanca. And now Salamanca Archive is now in Maynooth College. Well, it's actually in St. Patrick's College in Maynooth in County Kildare. Going to be talking to someone next week all about that and the importance and the connections and all that. So join me, please, for that next week on the programme. All right. Until then, have yourselves a great week. And thanks very much for listening. Thanks, as always, to my guests for today. That was George Lee. Thank you, as always, to our Spanish-Irish cultural advisor, Jose Antonio. Antonio Sierra, but most of all, thank you for listening. Look forward to your company again next Monday, and until then, please look after yourselves and each other. From me, Ger Sweeney, bye-bye.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.